You guys, this is Matt. We have two shows coming up in November, and they are real gags, people. On November 7th, we are part of New York Comedy Festival. We're so excited. Bowen and I are pumped to bring Culch War and I Don't Think So Honey Deathmatch to the Villain stage in Brooklyn on November 7th. This is going to be two teams. One team Matt, another team Bowen. Boo. And they're going to be going head to head to find out which team can deliver the best I Don't Think So Honeys. This is a head to head death match tournament competition, and Bowen and I are going to be captaining two teams. We have an amazing blue ribbon panel we're going to be revealing very soon. It's going to be very good. November 7th, Culch War, New York Comedy Festival, tickets on sale now. And then it's back to basics, bitch. On November 18th, we're going to bring in our third edition, I can't believe it's been three times, of I Don't Think So Honey Live. 50 comedians all killing it on the stage. You in the audience getting your laugh on, getting your gig, getting someone's phone number. I think a show is a really good place to meet someone. Because, like, you're having a good time. You don't have to talk about shared interests. You can talk about the show. It's happening right there. I don't know. I think it might be a good idea. So come as a single person or come with a new date. But either way, come. To either show or both, we have Culch War on November 7th at New York Comedy Festival and I Don't Think So Honey Live, Brooklyn Podcast Festival, on November 18th.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Ooh,
Lali.
What are you thinking right now?
I'm thinking I didn't drink this coffee in the right time frame.
What? Did you drink, like, too late? Will you be up all night?
I drank too early and now I'm a little crashy. But no, I'm great.
Okay.
Like, I'm like still there. I'm still wired, but you know, I'm dangling off the cliff, bitch.
Okay, I had the option to drink a coffee at 4 p.m. today, and I said, you know what, no, because I don't want to be up all night, because you know what that caffeine does to a bitch.
The caffeine does a wonders, ho. Listen, you want to know something? Kombucha update?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Right. Yes, I do.
Kombucha update, bought some Synergy Gingerade.
Gingerade?
It's sitting in my fridge because I have no desire to drink it.
Okay, well, I'll come over tonight and I will have it.
It looks disgusting.
I'm a kombucha bitch now. By the way, you know who sent me a picture of them and the gingerade kombucha?
Who?
Catherine Cohen.
Oh, Catherine!
And she said, taking the advice of my bitch.
Okay.
So you could say that Kombucha Nation has just begun. It's like Bachelor Nation, but healthier.
But healthy.
Okay. Do we have a good guest today?
I think we have a resplendent guest.
Maybe a bitch. Maybe like a true icon.
A true legend. A gay baron, a gay robber baron in NYC.
I love, actually, so much.
Love him. Some of his stories have changed my life.
Yeah, and actually, I want some of them to be told.
Some of them will be told, and he's telling some of his stories at his amazing new show at UCB.
Yeah, and that leads perfectly into the credits, Bo.
Okay, bitch.
He's got an amazing show running at UCB Chelsea, and it's called Yes, Honey, and it is directed by
Shannon O'Neill.
The legendary.
The legend.
You will also want to keep your eyes peeled, you guys, for the docu-follow series called Shade, Queens of New York City. Now, this is a drag queen, like, docu-series, like, slash reality show with all New York's finest. I'm talking Marti Gold Cummings.
Berta Filter.
Tina Burner.
Jasmine Rice LaBeija.
Who just called our guest prior to us going on the air, and we had to kick her off.
We had to kick her off because we said no.
He has a hard out. He's got a hard out at 8:30, but he arrived a brisk 20 minutes late. I put on blast.
You know, it's not my fault. I haven't been introduced. I'm just gonna say, was not my fault.
Let's He's also a new dog dad. Everyone, welcome our guest, Mike Kelton.
Okay, explain yourself. Why the lateness?
Okay, for real. Got an invite to this recording, which is very professional. Kudos.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But also, the address was 81 President Street.
Oh.
And so I went to the address.
I'm looking at Hot Producer Alex, and I'm really upset.
Were you guys not aware?
No, it might have been Hot Producer Joe's fault.
It was Hot Producer Joe's fault.
Wow.
Yeah. HPJ.
Good
invite
to know.
From Joe. So Logged. I went there and I'm just standing outside this like house and this old woman came out and kept looking at me and I was like, hey, here for the podcast, babe. She was like, she just kept like staring at me and didn't say a thing. And I was like, I'm for sure going to be like, a spell's going to be put on me.
Oh,
so
no.
Then I emailed and I was like, babe, here's where I'm at. And they're like, babe, that's not where we're supposed to be.
Oh, holy shit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hopped in an Uber. Sorry about it.
Hopped in an Uber at the old woman's house with a dream and a nice shirt.
Okay, I'm glad this got cleared up. And honestly, this is like a classic just capsule of a Mike Kelton story that will, like, that puts you in that place. Honestly, I was there with him.
You know what? He's so gifted with words that when he was telling us, Bowen, what had just happened to him, I saw it all.
I saw the woman. I saw the witch.
Yes. She was hunched over. Mm-hmm. Did she have a hunch?
Mm-hmm. A huge hunch.
Kel, tell us about this dog.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, tell.
Okay, so I think in life in Jen.
Okay.
Like,
here we go.
And like, there, you get to a point and you're like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Do I get
yeah.
a dog? Do I get a baby?
Uh-huh.
Do I get engaged?
Yeah.
Do I move out of my apartment? Do I move back home to Indiana?
Sometimes it's the sequence of those things.
Exactly. It could be one, two, three.
Yeah.
Right.
So I decided. So me and Andrew have been together a while. And we've been like kind of hinting at the dog thing.
Sweet boy.
Hinting to each other.
It's kind of scary because you're like, you get a dog with a person, you got to be with that person. And or if you break up, it's like someone takes the dog. So it's like that. You have to have that kind of like precursor conversation. Right?
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Of like who gets the dog?
Yeah.
So the way it happened is we were talking about dogs for a while. And then we both got super busy. Uh-huh. And then started working on the show. And then the first week of pre-production, I was super, super tired. We went out to dinner. I didn't have any free time. We're sitting outside of our favorite restaurant, Building on Bond in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about Building on Bond.
Okay. Okay.
I have some issues, but like, keep going.
Okay. Okay, I'm into talking about it.
Okay, great. We'll do it. Okay, so you're at Building a Bond.
We're at Building a Bond. We're sitting outside, and I was, like, just, like, venting to Andrew, which happens all the time. Uh-huh. And he's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I'm just so stressed. I didn't know that this was going to be this much work. Mm. And I was like, the only thing that could make this better is a dog. And he was like, you're an idiot. That's, like, impossible. But then, babe, what happens? My wallet falls out of my back pocket and my shorts, okay?
Okay.
An hour later, a woman comes by walking with the dog, and the dog sniffs my wallet. And finds my wallet because I would have forgotten it. And I go, oh my God, what a gem of a dog. And she goes, up for adoption, babe. And I go,
that very dog?
That very dog.
Oh my God.
And I go, no way, babe.
You have to
TM
be joking.
TM
Perrigan.
No way, so
babe.
Then we like are obsessed with this dog. His name is Django.
Django.
Wild. Wild anyway, that its name is Django.
Anyway, so we end up going, I know, it's honestly wild. So we go back to this woman's apartment, we have wine with her. We realize like she's a little bit unstable, so we had to get out of the apartment.
Yeah, you gotta go.
But then we just applied online at Badass Brooklyn, an incredible organization.
Yes, I heard.
We applied, we were like four glasses of wine in. And so we made this amazing application that talked all about us and our experiences, why we want a dog. And then they wrote back the next day, it was like, Django has actually been adopted, but like we've got Curtis.
And you were like, Curtis is not Django.
Exactly. We thought he was ugly. We actually thought
Curtis was ugly.
He was ugly.
Yeah.
And so we were like, we'll just wait around because it's not the time anyway.
Yeah.
Then we went to an adoption event and we just like literally fell in love with Curtis. And he's
so Curtis.
So Curtis is
better looking in person.
Oh, gorgeous in person.
As they so often are.
Always.
Am I right?
Wait, Curtis, what breed? Mike is like holding back something.
Can I tell you something?
Yes, please do.
So Andrew came into Brooklyn Crab.
Okay.
With a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And one Sarah Grace Wellborn was waiting on Andrew, and I happened to be on the very same floor. So I was walking around, you know, doing my thing, and I would see out of the corner of my eye Sarah Grace talking to Andrew, her old friend. And she came over to me and said, I feel really bad. And I said, what? She said, well, Andrew had mentioned before that he and Mike are thinking about getting a dog. And to be honest, me and the girl he's with were like trying to talk him out of it. Mm. And she said she thought she saw tears well up. And he put his sunglasses on.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah. What? Reveal.
He was a little bit upset. Because he really wanted the dog, and I think they were being good friends.
Too much.
They were honestly being good friends because they were like, look, you guys are really busy.
Having
a dog is a big responsibility. Uh-huh. And so they were kind of doing like what they should have done.
Right.
But he was like, you know, in love with
you think about it a lot. You build it up in your head and you fall in love with the dog.
And so that got back to you.
Oh, yeah. I came home and he was like, so I talked about the dog and he's like, I don't think they were fully on board with it.
Sarah Grace felt terrible. She came over to me, and she is my work wife, my work spouse. And she said to me, babe, I feel terrible. I said, come sit down. You're at work.
Come and chat.
We left the floor. I said, what's going on, babe? And I put my hand through her hair. She said, well, I just feel really stressed because I feel like I just might have hurt Andrew's feelings. And I was like, well, I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he's not weeping at the table. Before you knew it, a full scene in the restaurant. He cried, carried on. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. No. I was like, he didn't tell me that.
No. Although his sunglasses were on.
Which for him is just like, if it's after 6 p.m., mm-hmm. sunglasses are on.
Are you and Andrew both like...
sunglass gaze?
No.
I definitely sunglass gaze.
Okay, yeah. Sure.
And that's but we're like kind of opposites, which is
I was going to ask, are you both cool. like that sensitive? I feel like you're not... You are someone who is a feeling person, but only for the things that really... I'm going to say matter.
Oh, that's nice.
And would you agree with that? Maybe that's an unfair assessment.
I am very empathetic. Where like I take on people's energy and like I when there's like big issues going on in the world, I like take it on and I get really upset about it. And I am pretty sensitive. We're kind of both sensitive, but we just deal with it in different ways.
So would you have responded the same way? In that situation, if some of your close friends were like, maybe it's not a good idea.
I think I would have told them in the moment, been like, you guys are hurting my feelings.
Great.
Yeah, yes, you would have.
You would have done
and
that.
And I think he kind of did come with a little bit of that, but I think he was just like, he was really listening to their advice because he, I mean.
Because they did not have a point.
They had a point. And they said what they should have said in that moment.
Sure. Right.
But like, that didn't stop us and we got Kurt. He's the best. And here's the other thing. This is like, because I'm so busy.
Yeah.
I'm going to hate hearing this later, but like, I can afford to pay for doggy daycare.
There you go.
I hate that.
That's not. We have help. We got a lot of help. You know, it takes a village to raise a dog. We got a lot of help.
Look, I have the means.
I was reading this profile on New York Magazine about Lisa Ling and like what her life is like, and she like gets real about like childcare. She's like, I'm so grateful I can afford childcare when so many mothers can't in America.
Team.
And then someone in the comments was like, it's so refreshing for someone who has money to be upfront about having access to that. And I was like, is it refreshing? I mean, like, it's great. Just like, it's like,
appreciate the honesty.
But it's like, no, great. It's like, yeah, no, that's just a matter of fact thing. Like, you have it or you don't. And it's great if you have it. And it's
because
fine if you don't.
I think logistically, like, it would be really tough to have a day where, like, we were both, he was at school.
Yeah.
He's in grad school right now. And I was gone all day. And I would be like, I don't want to leave
a
dog
at
home.
Right, right.
It's not nice to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But since we can bring him to doggy daycare, it feels like a possibility.
It's great.
I also think. Sometimes it pisses a lot of mothers off when they read these stories about like Hollywood moms who do it all and they never mention the fact that they have help. It's like, don't pretend like you're this superwoman who has this $20 million a film career and also is like there for everything and meeting all the teachers and knows their names. Like that, I think, would piss me off as a mother. So it's kind of nice to hear when people are being super honest about the fact that like, yes, I have a team. Please don't think that like I honestly know what they're doing in school.
It's kind of like the same thing where like Erica Jane will be like, look, I spent 4 hours on this face. Like I have a full team that did my hair and makeup and that's why I look amazing. If you were to see me waking up, I would look like shit. We're just that honesty we appreciate.
I see that. Tell us about Kurt. What kind of breed, whatever, everything, tell us.
So no one knows what he is.
Little Maya.
And everyone is like, everyone has their own opinion. Like when we got him, they said Bull Mastiff on the website.
Cute.
Which the thing about Bull Mastiffs is they can become like 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, they're huge dogs. Yeah. And like Kurt's like, and they said he was in between 1 and 2, which also like our vet disagreed with. The vet was like, there's no way he's even 1. And we were like,
really?
Oh, okay.
She thinks he's really young.
Yeah, they think he's like puppy. So like we've kind of like, if we average everything out based on everyone's ideas about how old and what he is a Bull Mastiff Pit Boxer Shih Tzu. he's like a little bit of everything.
Who is 1 year old.
Yes.
We'll just call him 1.
We'll call him 1 eternally. Beautiful.
And it's a male dog.
It's a male dog, yeah.
Yes, it's not a female named Kurt.
No,
although that would be fun.
That would be
fun. It would be fun. It'd be a real nice fuck you to Republicans, I'll tell you that. All these Republicans out there saying dogs need gender normal names.
Wait,
no, fuck that.
That's true.
They're out there saying that.
That's true. That's honestly a very good point.
Yeah.
Which brings me to talk about gender neutrality.
Wait, can I be really vulnerable for a moment?
I want you to open up.
Kelton found me at a Starbucks in a really, I'm not going to say low place, but in a really specific place.
You're a guardian angel.
No, he didn't. I don't know if he saved me, because what he did was, what I did was, went on Craigslist, bought a gaming laptop for $600.
Mm-hmm. This is not where
and
I want this to go.
And I took it to a Starbucks to start downloading some patches for this game. Mm-hmm. And who should walk in but the warm but towering physicality of Mike Kelton. And
warm
said,
but towering.
Bo, what's... And then he was just like, what's that? Like, basically was just, like, asking what I was doing. And I was just very honest. I was like, I just bought this computer with $600 in cash. I need to start downloading this game so that I can... It can download while I'm at work. And he roundly shamed me. And I don't know if I've recovered from that.
Oh, my God. Did I shame you?
You didn't shame me. You took a pic. You took a picture of me on your Instagram story. Uh-huh. And people texted me. They were like, I just saw you on Mike Kelton's Instagram story. Are you okay? And I don't know. I think I owed an apology, to be honest.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, my God. I will for sure apologize.
No.
But the thing is, I will not.
I will do this, but I won't.
Rescinded, bitch, in the moment.
Oh,
honey.
My God. You know, I'm taking it back.
That's fair. That's fair.
I thought that was going to have a positive twist because no. I have a story about running into Kelton in a moment,
too. Oh, I have
too.
A million of those stories with Kelton, but you
I
go.
I feel like you disappear sometimes because, like, by golly, them. I don't see you a lot, but I see you when it counts, bitch.
Oh, I love
this was right after I literally left the audition for the CBS Diversity Showcase.
Uh-huh.
And I had such, like, I really didn't want to go do that.
Yeah.
But I had a feeling like I booked. And lo and behold, we did book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't end up happening for like crazy wild reasons. Mm-hmm. But I remember I said to you, I was like, I don't want to do this. And you were like, you have to do what you want to do and mm-hmm. create work and not be like being a part of like something that you don't want to be a part of. And then I ended up like saying I would do it and everything, but in the back of my head I always knew that was true. And I knew you were right. And I always was like, no, Kelton is right.
Yeah.
And this is not gonna happen. And then literally like cosmically mm-hmm. it didn't end up happening.
Because realistically you should not have done it. If for mm-hmm. some reason it was you compromising, even though it felt like a success. I feel like this happens a lot to a lot of our friends where like there's all this pressure on us because of what we're doing, and there's no actual road to success. So mm-hmm. we like to create like an idea, a roadmap of like, well, if this happens, like it'll be successful and people will be like, they're doing it, and then I'll feel better about myself.
Yeah.
But like, and that, those showcases are great for people, but the way that you expressed it to me, you were like, I did this, and the energy around it is like, I did what I think they wanted me to do. And mm-hmm. like, I know as like someone who's auditioned for that stuff, I'm like, I'm going to go in and like, do some gay stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's a diversity thing. I'm going to, like, I'll do a woman at a wedding. You know, like, I'll do like, a gay thing, and then I'll do an animal or something. Like,
animal.
And, like, your energy was telling me that it was, like, inauthentic for you. And you were like, but I did a really good job at, like, what I think they wanted. And so I was telling you, like, listen to that gut and don't fit into other people's mold, because I think there's like, I think that's what kills people in this industry is like fitting into a mold and like knocking it out of the park. And then when they get the success, they look around and people are looking to them of like, who are you as an artist? And they're like, not what you like. Shit.
Yeah.
What do I do now? Wow.
And you were one of the first people like in the UCB community, or in really even in the comedy community at large, that I saw that was really doing their own thing that I looked up to, because you were like doing your gay ass thing. Uh-huh. And like, it was you and like Josh and Aaron, like, and like BSJ. Like, I just like looked up to you guys because I thought, you know, they're not doing it the way everyone else does it.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in a way that I get, and I know that other people are going to get, and it's meaningful.
And that's huge.
Oh, that's nice.
Like, you, I remember I like felt like I scored in a performance early on for like while you were in the audience at the Pit, and mm-hmm. you went to leave the audience, and I ran out to go like talk to you because I like wanted your validation. Seriously, like I love you.
Oh my God, that's so nice.
No,
you
I
guys
do.
Are being really nice.
I do. No. I love you. I've always looked up to you so much. Ever like I remember when I first met you in the Pit Love Bar.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I went up to you and I was like, I'm actually like a big fan. And you were friends with Doug.
Uh huh.
And you were like, oh my God, who is this crazy fucking bitch?
No, I like. It's so funny because I genuinely was like. this guy is fucking adorable and super authentic, and like the fact that you said that, and I was a big fan of you. I was a big fan of the both of you because I talked to you every time I like would pitch something. Uh-huh. I would always include you, and then we were like kind of similar, so I'd be like, well, if I put Matt in, it's like I gotta take myself out of here, you know?
Oh, no.
Like,
yeah,
but yeah, like, yeah. But I, when you said that to me, I remember that, and I was like, you're so funny, and you're both like, you're both very loud, and like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. So when you said that to me, I was like, you're already doing that. Like, I see that in you. And it's kind of like the confidence that allows you to go up to people and be like, hey, I love what you do. That allows you to, I think, like, do what you do. But I hope I'm making sense.
No, it really does. It's a setting free of yourself.
But it's but you need to see an example of that. That just sort of happening by example. And my sort of seared Kelton memory is a Fancy Man show. I was like, it is an Indie Cage match. God. And then I think you just... This is all you said. Like, your character was, like, screaming really loudly. And, like, I think some, like, Henry Russell Bergstein was like, why are you talking so loudly? And then you just said, I have deaf. And it was
so glad you shared that story.
No. It was, I swear, not like ableist or anything. It was just like an earned funny moment, and I will never forget it because it was so goddamn funny in the moment. And like, okay, there's this Jamie Stoller used to host this podcast called The Waiting Game, and then Mike Helton was one of the first guests, and he tells these amazing stories about like what he felt like were his. And I don't know if it's, I'm just gonna say this for you. Like, you felt like you had hit rock bottom after you got stuck in your boss's elevator.
Okay, wait. Can you tell this story?
Because I think everyone needs to hear this story because it's amazing. It's so stressful. And just to hear Mike sort of coming back from that moment and, like, seeing where he is now is, I think, so inspiring.
Las Culturistas listeners, I'm excited for you right now.
Okay.
Do you mind? Are we putting you on the spot
a little?
Not at all.
Okay, I'm happy to share all this stuff. I always feel like, in general, like, a thesis of, like, before I tell this is, like, the worst things that happen to you, I always think are going to be end up being like your biggest power. Like RuPaul says,
of course.
Things that make you different or the things that you fail at are like your superpowers when you realize how to like use them. Yeah. But so this story, I when I was coming up at UCB, I worked as an executive assistant at a law firm in Chelsea, and I got the job like kind of as a mistake, where this woman who like I met at a gym was like, "Hey, I'm looking for an assistant," and I was just like, I don't have a job and I'm taking comedy classes, so like I'll do it.
Yeah.
And she was like, at the time, was super sweet, and we became friends, and it became a relationship where like I was working for her, but we were friends, so we would go out a lot. And then I did stuff for the firm, but it was like, I think you shouldn't be friends with your employees.
Yeah.
Like in general, it's something I learned from that. So I had apartments at her place for years and watched her dogs, her adorable dogs, and was like very fine with it, very used to it. And so this is DCM weekend, 2014, 2013.
Uh-huh.
DCM weekend, also Gay Pride weekend.
Yes.
Can we change that, please?
A great combo that is not so great.
It's not so great. So it was DCM weekend, and I was house sitting for my boss. And so I was at McManus on the Thursday night, and I mentioned to like someone, I think like Josh or Aaron, I was like, well, they were like, we should do something for Gay Pride. And I was like, well, my boss's common roof space is in Chelsea, right near the theater. We could do like a little drinks thing from like 5 to 7, and then people can go do their Pride stuff or go back to DCM or whatever.
Which seems totally reasonable.
Yeah.
It sounds lovely.
I mean, the more I go back to this story, the more I'm like, it's insane how the universe fucked me.
Because
or, like, saved me.
It's not like you were doing anything like out of the question. Okay, keep going.
Because I'm like the first person to be like inappropriate. So like anyway, so I invite people over, and like it started with like 5 people and ended up being like 12 of us.
Yeah.
Like 10 to 12 of us.
Yeah.
So
UCB gays.
Like the sweetest, best people in the world.
You love them.
You love them.
You want to cuddle them.
You want to cuddle them.
Sometimes you do.
Sometimes you cuddle them. So, like, it's 5 p.m. Sunday afternoon after, like, crazy DCM weekend.
Yeah.
And I, like, the way that it happens is, like, the elevator goes up to the top floor. So no one was going into the apartment, right? People were just coming up to the roof. And it ended up, like, Brandon Scott Jones was like, hey, can I bring someone else? I was like, of course. I know all of these people. So we're up there. We're literally drinking champagne and, like, having, like, 1 or 2 beers and, like, sharing stories. It's, like, it's like the tamest thing you could think of.
Yeah.
And so after 2 hours, it's, like, 7 o'clock. I'm like, all right, that's it. Like, we all clean up. We like, and I'm like being fastidious about it. I'm like, let's clean up. I want to make sure that no one like leaves anything up here. We put all of the bottles into these plastic bags. So we have these jingling bags and no. We get in the elevator and like, it's like seven of them are in and then there's like eight of them in. And I was like, and someone, I don't know who it was, but like maybe Brian Foss, I don't know, was like, let's just all get in the elevator. And I'm like, and people have had a couple drinks and I'm like, yeah, I was like, let's all squeeze in this elevator. We're sweaty. We're in tank tops. Some of us have fucked each other. Like, let's just get in anyway. So we get in the elevator. Doors close. It literally goes down like 6 inches and stops. Like 6 inches.
Because it's too heavy?
Because it's too heavy. And here's the deal. I'm like, uh-oh, like, reset. Like, you're pressing, like, the, like, reset button or whatever. And it's just moving a tiny bit, like, and then just stopping. And it's really, you couldn't move in this elevator. Like, it was like fucking like gay disco. It was like, no. It was like the duplex, like in this elevator, literally. If there was a piano, it literally would have been the duplex. So like people are all, everyone's, this is hysterical to everybody
except
but me.
Except you, yeah.
Except me, because I'm like, oh, this is my job. Like, and I did not tell my boss I was having these people over, because in my mind, I was like, it's a common roof space. It's like 5 to 7. No one's. They'll be gone. Whatever, and because it was Sunday, the elevator company wasn't working. So I called the number, and they were like, "Some woman was literally in the office, being like, FYI, we're closed." I was like, "What are you doing then?" She's like, "You need to call the fire department." So called the fire department. Not one, not two, but 3 fire trucks came to this apartment building. We were in there for an hour. And the firemen came. Yeah, go ahead.
So one elevator in the whole building.
One elevator, whole building. And this is the thing. It's one of those buildings where the elevator opens up to one apartment or the other side apartment. So people that lived in this building, it was a small, like, maybe like 12 units in the building.
Yep.
But like very, very nice. Yeah, it was a very nice building.
Yep.
And so everyone was like, we can't like get up to bring our groceries. If there's a pregnant woman, she couldn't get up to like go home. So an hour goes by, and people are cracking jokes, and I'm literally like sweating. I'm like, my job. And at the time, I couldn't pay my rent if I didn't make money from this job. Yeah. It was like why I didn't leave this job. And so then,
God, the bits happening around you for that fucking
the UCB
sucks.
Gays, mm-hmm.
literally
doing bits.
Yep, and they were good bits. Like, like if I quality. Wasn't if I wasn't having an anxiety attack, I would have been like, I love. So then the fire department comes up and they couldn't get the door open, so they had to break the elevator door by like jamming it open, and they broke into a neighbor's apartment. They broke down the fire door. They're like the full on fire door. They like, broke it down because they thought it was an emergency. I mean, it was. And so then they let us out. And all of us walk down the fire exit of this building with every tenant in the building screaming at us, who the fuck are you guys? What apartment are you from? What the fuck is going on?
And you're like tank tops. And
I'm like and who was it?
Ryan Williams, I think.
Ryan Williams walking down like God in someone's face. And like, honestly, like, God bless, because they were being aggressive to us. But sure. I was like, please think of me. Think of like the fact that like there's a person who I'm working for.
Yeah.
And like got in someone's face and someone got in his face. And I think he was like, you know, fuck you. Or like there was some type of like push or something. And we got out to the street.
Oh, no.
And I will never forget this. Like some, you know, I'm going to throw a little bit of shade. Some people were like still in Kiki World and they were like, we're out. Like, let's go to the bar. And I was like having a panic attack.
Yeah. Oh,
and God. Like, Brian Foss was such a sweetie.
Oh.
Like, there were a couple of people that really checked in, were like, are you okay?
Right,
but Brian Foss was like, what can I do for you right now? And I was like, I just need to, like, walk around the block and get some air.
Daddy.
So I called my boss. I literally, like, this is the person I am. I called her right away, and I was, like, crying. I was like,
oh my God.
Here's the deal. I was like, this is what happened. She's like, are the dogs okay? And I was like, the dogs are fine. I was like, I put them in doggy daycare because I didn't want them not peeing because I knew I was going to be out all night at DCM. Like, I was like being super proactive, even though she hired me to watch the dogs for the weekend and put them in doggy daycare. But I was like super proactive about everything.
Yeah.
And so she was like, it's totally fine. Like, my neighbors are crazy. And then cut to like 3 days later, I go into her office and she fired me.
Oh.
And I think like the co-op board really put the pressure on of like, this guy had a rager, and like, and so like they put pressure on her, and she felt that stress. So I got fired, and it was like, I literally was like, I don't know how I'm gonna pay my rent. I have a wedding to go to this weekend. I'm 26. I can't even afford to get to this wedding or give a wedding gift. Like,
wow. Oh my God.
It was so bad. But like, the moral of the story is, I had for a good year, I had written three draft emails to my boss quitting, being like, you're amazing, thank you for this opportunity and this paycheck, but I need to leave and like be a creative person. I can't be working in a law firm.
Yeah.
And I never hit send.
Yeah.
Send. And I, you know how when you're sad, like, and you buy a computer for the video games, like, you like can't get past it. You can't be proactive about like making that hard decision.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. And so like, thank God the elevator broke because it forced me to like be on unemployment and be super poor for a year and a half and like work on what I should be working on, which is like being a fucking nutcase.
No, but
how long did it take you to get to a place of even like being happy again after that happened? Was that like, were you like in the depths for like a little while?
What's so weird about it is when I was fired, I like was overcome with like sadness, and I was packing up the stuff. Like, I was fired and had to leave like this person who I'd known for 3 years, my desk, and I'm like packing up my stuff and walking out of this door. And as soon as I got to the street with all of my stuff, I felt amazing.
Really?
I literally was like, oh, I was like, this is it. This is my fucking ticket. Like, thank God. It's just when shit happens that's really bad, I think the moment after you realize, like, that had to happen, there's some kind of relief. And then I went to, like, I'm lucky that my dad works in New York, so I like, went to my dad's office, and I cried to my dad, and my dad was like, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah. Like, here, we gotta get you a phone. So he had to get me a phone because my phone was on the firm's.
Oh,
wow.
It was, like, it was bad.
Did your friendship with her survive, or was that also over?
We didn't talk for like a good 2 years, and then because we were friends, and like we were friends.
Yeah.
She, I forget who it was. One of us emailed each other and was like, "Hey, let's connect." And then we got drinks and we hashed it out. We had like that conversation. I was like, "I apologize. Like, what happened sucked." And she's like, "I apologize." And I'm actually going to next week. The firm's 15-year anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Which is, like, cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's, like, and I mean, I don't know, this sounds sort of petty, but it's, like, you get to just show everybody, like, where you are now, and it's this much
You should buy a beautiful gown.
Yes. I'll call Jasmine Rice.
Jasmine Rice, let me just arrive, like posing as if there's a red carpet, like they're up on the line, the paparazzi, and like just like go to the. I don't know. I'm doing like my pose right now that I would do if I were like a step and repeat.
It's good. It's like flowy. It's like.
I'm trying to think who I'm channeling right now. I think like prime Eva Longoria. Like.
Oh yeah,
her 6 month prime.
Well, it was a many years. You stupid bitch.
wait. Before we move on for the story, can you? I almost want you to name names that you can just say now. Who else was that? Well, no. Who is like still in Kiki mode after all of this? Can you tell us? Because I feel like it's been long enough where you can just say it and it's like no harm done.
Spill the tea.
Do you remember? Were Josh and Aaron like supportive, or were they just like bye?
They were like bye.
Yeah, that surprised me at all.
I mean, like, they're such funny people. Yeah, they were just like, they were like, you'll realize one day how funny this is.
Like,
that's not what you want to hear in the moment.
Not at all.
No, not at all. But, like, that makes total sense. And, like, I've never seen either of them be upset over anything.
Yeah, they don't get upset.
They don't get upset. I feel like sometimes with Josh, I feel like we've been hanging out and I said something sincere and I think he looked at me and, like, burned a hole in my soul. I was like, yeah, really? And he's like, okay.
Oh,
and I was like, Josh. And he's just one of those people that like, I always think that Josh and Aaron are like quicker than me. Or like sometimes I'm trying to catch up with the joke.
It's a little intimidating at first.
Yeah, because they're so fucking funny.
Yep.
Icons.
So funny. Wait, okay. We're going to ask you what we ask all of our guests on the show, which is, what is the culture that made you say, culture is for me?
Yeah, this is the culture as you were growing up. Like, I don't know. It happens at different ages for different people. You know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Movies, films, television, art.
Oh, okay.
A situational thing. The culture that really caused you, Michael Kelton, to step into the world of culture?
Great. I think I understand the question.
And you do.
You'll know
you do.
You'll
purposefully,
know
yeah.
It's part of the show that we make the question a little fucked up.
Okay.
Because it has to sound a little different each time, you know?
Okay, okay. I will say...
It's entertainment, babe.
Jagged Little Pill.
Oh, my God, Alanis.
Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill is, like, very much, I feel like, what defined me as a little gay boy, because I was, like, I was angry, but then I was, like, blissfully unaware. And then I was just, like, jamming. Like,
went to your house.
Yes.
I walked in your room.
Good.
I opened the door without ringing a bell.
That's really good.
It's not that good.
No.
But that song is like the hidden track, and people don't, I think, know it as well as they should.
Yes.
Because I feel like they turn the album off when the last song ends, but you have to keep listening to the hidden track.
But this is interesting because I feel like you weren't, I wouldn't call you an
That's
angry,
rule number 100. You have to keep
listening to the hidden track. I feel like you're not an angry person now.
I don't think Alanis, I mean, wow, this is going to be a hot take.
Say it.
I don't think Alanis was an angry person. I think she was a smart person.
Okay.
Like someone who's angry gets broken up with and they like, they burn the house down or they like go after the person or smash the windows out their car. But a smart person writes a song that becomes a number one hit that makes that person feel like the biggest douchebag the rest of their life.
Oh, and you think that's what happened to Alanis?
Mm-hmm.
You don't think she ever acted on those feelings?
No.
You think she just wrote them out? You think had she actually been confronted, she would just be like, okay, I actually need to like step away from the situation.
Yeah, or she'd be like, oh, I don't care. Like, I'm okay. I feel like with storytelling, that's what, like, I have trouble in the moment when stuff really upsets me. Like, I can be like, I have trouble sticking up for myself. Because I like to make other people feel comfortable.
Yep.
But like the situation where I got fired. Like when she fired me, I stood in her office and I just cried and I kept saying I'm so sorry because I couldn't stick up for myself.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be like, what you're not realizing is this and this.
Yeah.
So as an artist, like I just was like, I'm gonna, like, I am witnessing this and I'm gonna use it and I'm gonna tell people this story that will like hopefully help other people or make them laugh or whatever.
Right.
And that's how, like, it's like the weird way that I experience life too. Like, I always know that in a relationship, if I start storytelling about that relationship, it's kind of a bad thing because it means I'm not dealing with the issues with that person.
Sure.
So in that way, that's like a long-winded way to say that with Alanis, I was like, I get you, girl.
Yeah. That's so interesting that your response to conflict is to, like, retreat and apologize, because mine is fully to be very defensive and argumentative. I've noticed that about myself.
It's different strokes. It's can be helpful to be that way. Like, I think sometimes I really wish I could just be like, shut the fuck up right now and listen to the real situation. But I just, like, accept things. I'm one of those kids that always was like, I was never in trouble, and if people were like, you did this, I was like, you're right, and you know what, I apologize. Like, I was like, even if I didn't do it, I always took responsibility for things. Sure.
So Alanis, that was 96, so this was like, I guess, early teens, like,
no 96
I was like nine.
Yeah.
Oh, nine. Mm-hmm. Oh, so you were kind of, you were feeling feelings that really you had no right to feel, bitch.
100%.
Just adult feelings, yeah.
It was from a past life. I was really feeling.
I thought you would have been like 12, 13. And, you know, there I can feel, you know, you feel like burning down a house, or at least you think you do. But at age nine.
I don't know. I was kind of a quiet. I was, believe it or not, I was like a quiet, very weird kid where I could play by myself. And I just was like, I was on the swim team, so I would be at the pool, and I loved to, like, run around in my Speedo and, like, play imagination with myself. Like, I was a very, very weird but, like, confident kid where people were like, you're weird. I was like, I'm actually having a blast.
Babe. That's great. Oh, that's great.
And then the other thing I would say culturally is, sorry, I can't think of the name. It's not Mean Girls. It's Clueless.
Clueless.
To me, when, like, I think Mean Girls is an incredible movie, but I feel like the generation gap is do you relate to Clueless or do you relate to Mean Girls?
Wow. Yeah. And I, you know what's funny is, like, I Clueless came out when I was like 5,
uh-huh.
and then Mean Girls came out when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess looking at them both now, it's weird because I didn't get Clueless at the time when it came out because mm-hmm. who's 5 and gets Clueless?
Right,
literally, like most like teenagers don't get Clueless. Mm-hmm. It's like so smart. But there was something about that movie that that now looking mm-hmm. back, I feel more close than Mean Girls, because Mean Girls is more of like a Tina Fey style, like making jokes about these
yes.
things. Mm-hmm. Like it's very jokes driven.
Observational.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, but whereas Clueless, it felt different. It was like jokes about not
it was about
only
the world.
High schoolers, but about the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Or the world of the movie. That's what I mean. It's just like they're wearing these fucking crazy hats. Like,
yes.
This is, you know, like it's normal to like, I don't, it's just normal to look like the way they look like in,
yeah.
in high school. And yeah. yeah.
Maybe there because was, it was yeah. an Austin adaptation. Honestly, it right. was like based on a classical mm-hmm. like work in a way.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like it had that kind of timeless quality to it. Whereas Mean Girls feels like its own self-contained story mm-hmm. that only could have been written at that time.
Right.
Whereas like Clueless has this like kind of timeless story
yes.
of like, you know.
It feels like Clueless was like a stamp of a generation.
Yeah.
Whereas Mean Girls is like a really good comedy movie.
Yeah, I think that's it. And like
that's,
great
yeah.
one-liners. Like Mean Girls is like a standalone great film, but like people quote it because it's just like joke, 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 joke. It's like Tina Fey. It's like 100%. Joke, joke, joke. Yeah.
And I do think it's interesting, too, if you compare... I'm going to get all weird right now. If you compare, like, Lindsay Lohan's character to...
Alicia Silverstone.
Ty. No, to Ty.
Oh, Ty.
Ty.
Brittany Murphy.
Oh, wow, Brittany Murphy.
Brittany Murphy,
yeah.
because those were both
the
new underdogs
yes.
water,
yeah.
that became the Queen Bees.
Yeah.
Right.
There was a difference in the way that Brittany Murphy's character became the Queen Bee. It wasn't, like... It wasn't purely about manipulation. It was like about people bringing her up, and then when she got there, she was like, "This isn't really me."
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, this is like really hard to explain.
No, this
it feels
is great.
Like an Excel chart in my head, but like, which I hate. But it feels like Lindsay Lohan's character was like doing it as a game.
Yeah,
she was like,
yeah.
she's like, in order to beat these people, I'm going to play this game. Where Brittany Murphy was blissfully being like, sure, like
just unknowingly,
yeah, I'll do this.
Yeah.
yeah, this is how you act here.
Yes,
yeah.
Where it was like her being introduced to the '90s, as opposed to like, you know, Lindsay Lohan like playing the game and trying to like undercut the bitch.
Yeah, yeah. yeah
you
yeah.
know, at the end of the day, I think they often get grouped together, but two totally different fucking movies.
Totally,
like,
totally.
It's like, and it's almost like unfair to both to like have them compete, but I think people
True.
Do it with Mean Girls and with
Heathers
uh-huh. and with Clueless, where
uh-huh.
they're kind of defining like girl-driven teen comedies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they exist there, and I don't know. I guess it's about time one of the, like, there's a new one, because
it really
it is.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, Mean Girls is 13 years ago.
What was that movie with what's her face?
Easy A?
Not Easy. No, I wouldn't count Easy.
I wouldn't either.
Me neither. It doesn't seem as impactful.
It's
yeah.
that girl, it's Hailee Steinfeld was in that movie.
Oh, Edge of 17?
I hear it's like, people were saying at the time, like critics were saying at the time that it's like of that sort of caliber.
It deserves to be in that pantheon.
But like I feel like I gotta watch it. So I mean, what am I saying? I'm just bringing it up as like a reference. Like that's
yeah.
maybe the closest thing we have to that, which
yeah.
is sad.
But it's interesting that it's probably time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The fact that we're talking about it means it's in the ether.
Yeah.
Right?
And
it's, we're ready.
Or it means that we should
write it.
Sorry,
and it'll have a gay lead.
Oh my God. No.
Wait, how do you
no.
do that?
I was. You wait. Put your tongue on the roof of your mouth.
This is an impression.
It's really more of a click than it is a pop.
Okay, I'm going to try. Well, that's Bo.
That's
Bo.
Yeah.
And now Matt.
I am.
And now me.
Yeah. Mm.
See, you're doing a tongue click.
You're like raising your tongue up and then like.
So what?
It's really more driven by one side of your mouth.
So go on.
Try
like, commit to one
like,
side.
Try doing like a. Hey,
okay, great.
She looks really. You
hey,
know, like hey.
She looks really. I don't know. I'm not good at that.
All right.
I mean, okay.
Well,
this is a great
segue. Different stroke.
This is a great segue into Shade, Queens of New York City. Queens of New York City.
Queens of NYC.
Queens of NYC.
Queens of NYC. So this is a, I guess, can we expect like a Real Housewives style show?
It's still in development. Like you're still working through sort of what it might be.
We have a locked 101. We have a fine cut of 102. So like the pilot is, the one is done.
Uh-huh.
And we are, it's funny, when you, like, when you make a pilot, you, like, figure out the style of stuff, but when you know you have to start working on episode 2 and 3, you're like, this is what it is. Like,
yeah.
This, you're figuring it out as you go. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting because the characters, these queens, are fucking incredible.
Yeah.
They're, like, they're such dynamic human beings mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that, like, I keep learning more about them, and I'm like, I want to show the world that. Like, I think the idea for the show was I was talking to Marty Gold Cummings, like, over a year ago, and he met with me to pitch a documentary of him moving home to Maryland and running for mayor. And I was like, bitch, what? I was like...
Did that really happen?
He wanted to.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, that's really interesting. But I was like, tell me why you want to do that. And then he started talking about how he's, like, he started doing all these fundraising shows and getting super politically active, and how all these queens were, like, doing shows to raise money for a queen who was beaten on the subway, and, like, uh-huh. all of these things that... really, to me, subverted the expectations of, like, what, like, top of rain, what you think of when you think of drag, yep. which is, like, fierce people, funny people, RuPaul's Drag Race,
yeah.
Living for them. Like,
right.
But not, like, this kind of, like, all of the heart behind it, which has always been there. Like,
yeah.
since the beginning of gay culture, drag queens were the people that were, like, uplifting the community.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think people don't see that, at least in media,
That's true.
So I was like, what's the story behind that? And so then I met with all of these queens and interviewed them about the community in New York, about what they do in their day-to-day lives. And I was like, oh my God, like, that's a show. You guys are a show. And so then, like, pitching this show, people are like, yeah, drag queens. But, like, we hear a lot about drag queens. And I was like, the show isn't just drag queens. It's, like, the human beings behind them.
Mm-hmm. You don't hear a lot about drag queens either because you're being... right now with Drag Race, which I would consider, like, maybe is the only media outlet that exists right now, is
very
that
very much so.
You're fed a specific, fun, competitive image of one.
Mm-hmm. And that changes everything.
Yeah.
Of course.
And it's like, oh, well, I have a favorite and it's this person. But with this, it's like, no, it's not about, like, who's better. It's just
exactly.
about their human stories.
Exactly. What makes them tick? What do they believe? What is their style of drag? Like, why does Britta Filter do drag as opposed to, like, Tina Burnard? Is it different or is it the same thing? I know it's, like, as gay men and performers, like mm-hmm. we all are, it's, like, there's a reason why we like to make people laugh. And I think it's a part of growing up and having to make other people laugh, mm-hmm. a point of shame that we feel like we're wrong to
yeah.
begin with.
Yep.
So there's something really magical and special about us.
Yeah.
And I think more so with drag performers, because not only do they, like, I want to perform, but they're, like, I'm going to... dress as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a gag myself,
yeah.
right? I'm going to be a clown, make people laugh, make people feel good, and communicate something that ultimately takes away other people's pain. And most of those people are gay men in gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's so universal for where we are right now as
yeah.
a society of, like, we're so divided and everything is pretty fucked up that, like, if you can empathize with these drag performers, like, my goal with whatever I make is always, like, to show it to my dad and have him be like, that's really cool. My dad was, like, he's a lawyer. He grew up Republican. And, like, if he can be like, these fucking drag queens rock. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting and also scary because you're making a drag show with a community online that are, like, waiting for, like, another Drag Race type thing. And it's just not going to be that.
Which is sort of how it should be.
Yeah. I'm just nervous that people are going to be like,
Where's the fierceness? Where's the reading?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Where's them being like, oh, no, bitch. Like, there are moments of that because they're drag queens and they perform.
Yeah.
But, like, it's mostly, like, there's, like, really beautiful moments where, like, Britta FaceTimes with her mom and talks about, like, struggling with her health issues and, like, mm-hmm. her mom, at the end of this call, goes, you got this, baby. You're my favorite drag queen. And I'm like, oh, that's so special.
Yeah.
Like, people need to see that. That's like some kid growing up in Iowa, some 15-year-old kid that's like, I want to do drag, but, like, is too scared to because he's like, my mom will disown me. If he could watch a show with his mom and see the mom be like, oh, that mom is supportive and that mom is fucking Mormon. Like,
yeah,
how cool. So,
oh my God, Britta brought her mom to a show once, and she was so sweet. So sweet.
So sweet. We love Kim. I've been on, like, calls with her, like, prepping her for, like, the scenes where she's on a call. I'm like, we just want you to, like, talk to Jesse and, like, just, like, be your beautiful self.
Yeah.
She's like, that's it? And I'm like, that's it.
So fun. I mean, and that is, and just people being like, where are the tongue pops? Where's the reading? Like, that is just a prescriptive
People don't thing. Understand that it's an edited...
Yeah.
Within an inch of its life thing. Even RuPaul admits they produced the fuck out of that
show.
I think that's like a direct quote. So it's like, especially with a competitive show, like it's extremely well done, and I think it's great that it exists because it opens people's eyes up to it. I mean, I showed my dad one episode of Drag Race, and it happened to be the reunion of this year.
Oh my god,
where they were like coming
for
each other.
That's such an intense episode.
And I was like, you know, this isn't a normal episode of the reunion. He's like, I want to watch it. And his takeaway, and he keeps saying this every time my sister and I talk about it, was, you know, I was struck by how honest they are with each other. They all seem very open to critique, and they're just able to really talk about each other very honestly, and I've never seen anything like that. Like, because I think that's different for straight people.
Oh yeah.
I think honesty, especially in, like, suburban areas, like, you don't talk to each other to your face about what's real. Like, you wouldn't walk up to someone in the grocery store and be like, hey, your daughter is being shitty to my daughter, and or maybe they would.
Yeah,
but
no, you're right.
But mothers in suburbia are drag queens, and they need to know that. But, like, especially with men, you know what I mean? Like, you don't get real with each other in that way. And
hey,
it's
buddy,
not,
how's it going? Pretty good, bro. Amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's certainly not in the name
terrible,
of sisterhood,
like,
or brotherhood.
Straight people, you're welcome.
No, but that's really. I mean, you're not far off from it. They don't speak like that. So I think it's interesting to hear that his pull was. That's interesting how they're so honest with each other and how they, you know, read each other to filth, and that's okay.
But meanwhile, honesty is also this, like, human thing, and that's just your dad responding to, oh, these are human beings. And I think that's, I mean, hopefully, I think that's probably what Shade Queens of NYC is going to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's my hope for it. And it's really cool because you'll see in the first episode, it's very much about, it's called It Takes a Village Girl. Initially it was Bitch, and the network was like, no. It Takes a Village Girl. And it's about, like, kind of Marty's activism. He literally started this club in Hell's Kitchen called Hell's Kitchen Democrats. And it started with, like, three members in a living room. And now there's, like, hundreds of members.
Our friend Carl is in that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And they meet every week. And Marty, which is, like, a real... I think people are going to see the show and be like, you created these things. And I'm like, no, this is real. Marty has his therapy show right after Hell's Kitchen Democrats. So he goes in face to the meeting in, like, you know, boy.
Fun.
And face on. And he, like, leads this meeting. He's like, hi, everyone. Here's our new initiative. We're, like, we want to, like... get out the word and have people, like, create safe spaces for people. And he gives this whole speech. He's in face, and he's like, I know I'm in face, but, like, I'm a drag queen, so, like, get over it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
It's just, and then he puts up these posters, and it's like, it's really beautiful because you're like, this is just a human being. Like, his drag has really nothing, like, I think maybe a byproduct of the show is some parts, like, the drag has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
It's just like, these are really awesome people.
Which is so cool. Wait, we have a funny Mardi Gras coming story.
I live.
When Matt and I went to go see Sunset Boulevard, Mardi Gras Cummings went too and was like in full drag, and I forgot what she said, but she greeted, she said hello, and she goes, can't wait for this fucking drag show. And then, like, walked in, because it's fucking Glenn Close being
Glenn Close, like, really serving.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And Mardi Gras was there, and it was very fun to see her.
Mardi
She's amazing.
In like fishy drag.
Yeah, she looked great.
Yeah, like, she had, like, a fucking curly ponytail, which is how I never see Mardi like that.
Because Mardi actually didn't start, this is part of an episode too. Mardi, I'm like giving away everything. But Mardi didn't start wearing wigs until Drag Race, because Drag Race auditions are this crazy thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is it a topic with the girls on the show?
We are steering clear of it because we don't want to fuck with World of Wonder. Like, they have this, like, monopoly of, like, drag television shows. Yeah. So
it's pretty intense.
It's intense. And I don't want to, like, fuck with them. Like, here's our show. This is our aim. Yeah. And I don't want to, like, there to be any
reading of that.
That being said, Marty didn't start wearing wigs until, like, his third time auditioning for Drag Race, because he was like, oh, everyone on Drag Race has a wig. It's, like, a big part of the show. Sure. Like, don't take off your wig. You know, like, this is part of drag.
Yeah. You have to be able to wear them.
Yeah. You have to. Yeah, of course.
Even Sasha.
But, like, Marty, like, it wasn't a part of his drag and now is a part of his drag. And so I found that to be interesting because it's like, what, and now he does wear wigs and you're like, this doesn't seem Marty to you. And to be honest, as Marty's friend, I think Marty looks best when he's in boy hair and face, to be honest.
It's an iconic look for Marty. Yeah. You're like, oh, that's a Mardi Gras coming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that. Like, I'm like, he looks like LaRue to me.
Yeah. LaRue? Chi-Chi LaRue?
No, like Bulletproof.
Oh, Bulletproof LaRue. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's so interesting when you talk to a drag queen and you ask them, you bring it up. Like, I wouldn't name any names now, but the thing is, like, when you bring up the show to certain queens, like, and you ask if they've auditioned, it's kind of like a roll of the eyes or, like, a whatever. But you get this sense that it's like this thing that they all kind of hate,
mm-hmm.
but would be on in a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the relationship with the show is so strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it like Harold Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Or like SNL. Yeah. That's a really good example. It's like, as comedians in New York, there are incredible comedians everywhere. You can go to, like, any show at, like, any of the theaters in New York, and you'd be like, that person's fucking hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is that person? And then, like, they're on a team for a while, and they do it, and they're, like, just a comedian in New York, and they never get the acclaim. But then there are people that rise up super quickly, that get SNL, that are also super talented, but it doesn't mean those other people are not super talented.
Yeah. No,
and I think for Drag Race, it's become, like, Drag Race has made drag, thankfully, part of pop culture, which, like, is great for everyone and the LGBTQ community, because, like, everyone's celebrating something that started with us, but it's also made it like so they can't feel successful now unless they get on that show. Mm-hmm. And like, what happens for a queen like Tina Burner, I think, is literally one of the best queens in New York. She's been doing
legendary,
it for a while.
Legendary.
She slays. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, we talk about drag, and she's like, I've auditioned. She's like, my videos get tons of views. Like, the producers watch and live for it, but then I'm not on. And I'm like, I think they're dumb to not put you on, because you would be an amazing character. And she might, part of our show is we wanted the girls to be able to do Drag Race, so like, they can do Drag Race. Like,
and also be on the show.
They can also, they probably would be like, they would leave for a season and do it, but like, they can do Drag Race, because it's a part of the drag community in New York that they're going to want to do it.
It is still aspirational no matter what.
It's the ceiling. It's the ceiling. And I think many of the queens on the show are going to probably make it on Drag Race someday.
Yeah, I think so too. And I hope so for them. Like, I think they're all, I love them all like so much. And I want them all to succeed, which is why I put them on my show. Because I was like, you guys are stars.
They're all incredible. The queens that you've assembled for it. I think that Brita Filter is like, in terms of the gay community, I think that's a future household name.
Yeah.
Because the thing with Brita, and this is interesting, she's like, I don't want to be on Drag Race. I want to be the next RuPaul.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, girl, yeah. I'm like, you go do it, because I could see that for you.
And she even breaks outside the boundaries of, like, you know, that kind of drag, where she'll fucking do a lip sync mix of a song with a Key and Peele sketch.
100%.
Like, she is, she gets it. Uh-huh. Brita, star.
What I would do is, if I was her, is I would wait till I had fucking 500,000 followers, mm-hmm. and then I would apply.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would Bianca Del Rio this shit,
mm-hmm.
and come in and just literally eat the competition.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, do you do it when you're just, like, coming up and people are starting to live for you,
mm-hmm.
and then you might not do super well in the competition, and then that's it? Or do you wait until you're, like, an established queen, and then you're like, now
that's
I'm ready?
That's what they look for now, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, a lot of these queens that I'm hearing are going to be on the next season are big social media queens. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard the rumors, and, like, things have been confirmed, mm-hmm. or whatever, by people that we know. But, like, these queens that get on, like, they do have social media followings because, you know, World of Wonder, like any company, is mm-hmm. going to want to have people get excited about their contestants. It's like how The Voice now, and American Idol even, I think, recruit people to audition.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not this thing of, I came in from the field and I heard there was a singing competition and I love to sing in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Let me strike all my number and see what happens.
What's that girl's name?
Carrie Underwood. That's literally not a made-up character. That's my impression of Carrie Underwood.
Oh my God.
From Chakota, Oklahoma.
But I think that TV is different now because social media has literally changed the game.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Television doesn't need these people, just like MTV doesn't, like, or musicians don't need MTV anymore.
Or that these people don't need TV. Yeah, but yeah.
Like, they, like, these queens are great. They can make their own content. They can, like, all their pictures. Their Instagram is basically, like, their resume at this point.
Yeah. And they're booked on the same shows as the big queens.
100%.
Like, I just saw Alyssa Edwards is doing a show at, like, Skirball, and she's on it with,
She did it with Brita. She did it with Brita.
Yeah, she did it with Brita.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, I was like, they're performing for the same crowds. All those people, and you know the show will sell out because it's Alyssa, who I think is probably the biggest queen right now in terms of, like,
I know, I'm beyond obsessed. I mean, of course.
Beyond
obsessed. Of course.
And, but all those people that came to the show will see Brita and be obsessed.
And love
you know what
her.
I mean? And I'm sure her numbers are skyrocketing in terms of followers. I do think that the next RuPaul will come from that show.
But who
knows what it'll be in the next generation.
I disagree, because that show sets it up where, like, if you're the most successful from Drag Race, you're the most successful from RuPaul's show. right? It's not a it's a show where it's like it's someone's competition, and RuPaul is, I mean, the best. We love her, but like it makes it impossible for someone to surpass her.
Everyone's success will be tethered to Ru.
That's because we have yet to see what's going to happen with these spinoff shows. That's true. Alyssa Edwards is going to have her spinoff show, like the House of Edwards. Trixie and Katya are going to have their spinoff show. Let's see how those play out. You could have someone break out.
Maybe.
I mean, remember, like...
But I think it's just as plausible, and I think this is what Mike is saying, is that someone unassociated with the show might, like, blow the fuck up in a way that's completely irrespective of that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Literally, I mean, who knows what's going to happen.
Who knows? Okay, let's move on to Not I Don't Think So, Honey.
Now we have a twist.
Woo!
We have a twist because Mike Heldman, I'll say this again, has a show running at the UCB currently called Yes, Honey.
Storytelling.
Storytelling show at UCB Chelsea. Ooh. And it will be 2 times a month. You can check UCB theater.com or whatever and get it on the schedule. And like, you can see.
If you guys, I'm going to do a quick plug. All the queens we were just talking about on my show, we're doing, it's going to be a drag show October 26th.
Spooky.
October 26th. The day before Kelly Clarkson's album comes out.
Exactly. Okay. And we timed that out perfectly. But yeah. It's I'm doing my 30-minute storytelling show, and then it's becoming a drag show, and like five of the girls
at
my
UCB?
Show. Yeah, are doing numbers.
Huge.
Oh,
that's
incredible.
Huge.
Uh-huh.
Historic.
And again, that show's directed by Shannon O'Neill, and I'm going to put the pressure on right now because I'm going to say it on air. Have we asked her to be on this show? Okay. Well, we'll reach out again because I really wanted her to come on
this
show.
The best.
The best and also the busiest, but she can clear a goddamn
She can clear.
Endlessly interesting. Okay.
She can clear.
We're not doing I Don't Think So, Honey. We're doing a
Yes,
Honey.
So this is where we take 1 minute to go positive.
Okay.
On something that we love in culture.
Yes.
And we've never done this.
No, this is huge.
And we've been read by one, Josh Sharp, in the last I Don't Think So, Honey live. And he said, I don't think so, honey. I don't think so, honey. Well, Josh, tonight we agree.
Yeah.
Yes, honey is going to be 1 minute on the clock, and we're going to go positive about something that we love in culture.
Yes.
This is
going to
be beautiful.
This is good end.
Because you are good end, famously.
Love you guys.
And we're going to be good end.
We're going to be good end. Do you want to start? Do you have something?
I have something.
Okay, bitch.
Okay, I have my notes here, too. I wrote a bunch of things.
There you go.
I'm really excited. I'm smiling.
Okay, so
I love this.
You want me to get
I want you to time it.
I'll time it. Okay,
I
I'm
have
so
my
sorry.
Notes in front of
Here
me.
Here we go. This is Matt Rogers. This is Yes, Honey. 1 minute. Time starts now.
Yes, honey. Demi Lovato.
Yes.
You look amazing in a new video. Sorry. I'm not sorry.
Oh.
I voice cracked. But you know what? Demi Lovato doesn't. Demi, I love your high ponytail. I love your makeup. Your beat to the gods in every video. You look amazing. Also, Demi, I love that in every music video you're in, there's a pool. Chlorine, bitch. Keep it chlorinated. Demi, I love your Miami aesthetic. I always see your name written in neon lights. In fact, that's the name of one of your songs.
30 seconds.
Demi, not only do you back worthwhile charities and causes like the Jed Foundation, but you show up for them, honey. Yes, honey. You put your money where your mouth is. Not like your trash ex-bex friend, Selena Gomez,
Ooh.
Who takes money from people suffering.
Seconds.
Ooh, she makes money from suicide. I don't like her.
Oh, my God.
Yes, honey, Demi Lovato. That's not wrong. Thank you for putting a talented and real face
Five
on
seconds.
Mental illness. And struggles facing many people, especially young people. And I love you. You have an amazing voice, and your idol is Kelly Clarkson, like me.
Oh, and that's 1 minute.
I love Demi Lovato.
Demi's good.
She's talented.
She's a good one. She's gonna blow her fucking voice out pretty soon.
Stop it.
Okay.
This is Yes, Honey.
That's okay.
This is Yeah. I'm not okay. All
There's
right.
nothing better than a diva that blows it out before 25.
There
Selena
you go.
Gomez is evil.
Bad gaskets. Okay. All right. This is it. This is it. This is mine.
This is yours.
I
mean, yes,
notes. Oh, my God. I did not prepare for this as
well,
much.
That's on you.
All right. Here we go. I have one.
And Bowen Yang's Yes, Honey starts now.
Yes, Honey, Tabasco-flavored cheeses.
Woo!
They are my number one favorite cracker. Do not give me Ritz sandwiches. Do not give me Ritz bits. That's what they're called. Do not even give me white cheddar Cheez-Its, honey. I want the tangy, spicy taste that is just right. It's a low, mild on the Scoville scale, which is the scale for spiciness, for capsaicin, which is the spice chemical. That's, well, you know, whenever you taste something spicy, that's capsaicin, bitch.
Alliteration ho.
And I love me some Tabasco-flavored Cheez-Its. They are my favorite cracker. Whenever you are, if you're drunk, if you're sober, if you're a little bit stoned, you love yourself some Tabasco-flavored Cheez-Its, bitch. I love it when I'm watching TV. I love it when I'm talking on the phone with my friends.
Woo!
I love it when I am just playing my video
seconds.
Games on my $600 laptop, bitch. I love it. And look, if you want to buy some Tabasco-flavored Cheez-Its, run, don't walk.
5 seconds.
Get thee to a funnery to the Tabasco flavored Cheese It grocery store, bitch.
That's 1 minute. Yes, honey.
Yes, honey.
Oh my god, this is a true thrill.
I love it.
I want to try that.
I want to try
delicious,
too.
Delicious. You must. You'll love it.
With a little bit of marijuana.
They're the Brita filter of crackers, bitch.
Okay.
Everyone will love.
They're the Brita filter crackers?
They're the Brita filter of crackers.
Oh, everyone will love that. Yes, honey.
Everyone will love.
It's crackers.
All right, so now it's Mike Kelton, and he's going to do a Yes, Honey. And this is amazing.
I want to let you, everyone know listening, I haven't decided what this is going to be until literally he says go. And
this is a for real thing.
I literally haven't decided.
Are you still on Harold Knight, some kid?
Yes. Yeah, I had to take a break to work on the show, but I'm coming
back. Well, there you go.
Okay,
the
great.
Glorious return.
So let's add to the credit. She's on Some Kid with the amazing former guest of our show, Monique Moses.
Monique. Here we go.
Now, this is Mike Helton's Yes, Honey, and his time starts now.
Yes, honey, do you want to know who's the best? Maggie Rogers is the best. And if you don't know who she is, now you know. Maggie Rogers is one of the best musicians I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh,
it started with a YouTube video of her doing a masterclass at NYU with Pharrell, and he's like, oh my God, I hear this song about Alaska, and she's like, I'm living for it. She's very, very spiritual. And here's the thing. I saw her 2 weeks ago, or a month ago, in Brooklyn, and she started out the concert by saying, I just want everyone to know this is a safe space for everyone, and we welcome everyone. If you're a refugee, if you're gay, if you're whatever, I don't give a fuck, and I love you, and I love that. Also, she's very, very spiritual, and I feel like I've known her in a past life, which is a very for real thing.
Yes,
and she
seconds.
Talks about that yes. stuff. And also, she has a new album coming out, because there's 4 songs that she already has, like Alaska and a couple other ones, a very good energy, and you should have sex to one of those songs.
Oh.
But here's the thing, next album is going to be dancey and even gay. Maggie Rogers, yes, honey.
Oh, yes, honey, yes, that's honey! 1 minute. Oh, my gosh.
Maggie Rogers, I've never heard of her.
Maggie really?
Can I say something?
You love.
Wow, Hot Producer Alex loves her. Can I say something? This is really beautiful because you know what just happened.
What?
My dog named Maggie just passed away. Maggie Rogers. That was my...
Wait, her name was Maggie Rogers?
Her name was Maggie Rogers. She was 10 years old. She was a golden retriever. She was the sweetest dog that lived in the world. And I've never heard of this person, Maggie Rogers, until you said that. And I do believe that this is
part of Maggie Rogers, the dog's soul.
This is a cosmic moment.
Wow. Because I was, in my head, I was going to do Maggie Rogers or Seltzer. And I decided last minute to do Maggie Rogers.
And you know what that is, Mike? That's God.
That's
God. That's God. That's God.
You know what? That's gone.
That's gone.
Everything is God. From God.
Everything comes from God.
God is amazing.
God is an amazing figure.
God is an amazing figure. And it is only God I will follow.
Here you go. Spiritual.
Now,
we're all spiritual.
This has been a spiritual episode.
Mm. Oh, yes. We love.
Of Mike Helton on I Don't Think So. Well, on Los Ocaristas.
And the second time you've done
Do you want to share that thing you were going to say before? At the beginning of the podcast, you were like, I'm going to spill some tea on what Mike Helton said to me.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
You got to share.
So I was hosting a show at UCB
with Brooke, Shields.
Brooke Shields, which went great.
So fun.
Did you stay and watch it?
Didn't have to go home. Ty.
Ty.
Tired. So it went great, but I was walking backstage and I said, how was Yes, Honey? Because it had up in that night.
Yes, yes.
And he said, you know, went through some strife when I was naming the show because I thought it was too similar to I Don't Think So, Honey.
No
but
way.
You know what? I named it Yes, Honey anyway.
And thank God.
And he didn't even care. He thought, will it affect them? And then he thought, you know what? Oh, I don't give a fuck. I'm Mike Helton.
No.
I dwarf these hoes.
He dwarfs these hoes, stunts on them by naming his show slightly adjacent to other shows, but he surpasses them. That's Mike Helton for you. Wow.
I love you a lot.
I love you guys so much.
And I'm really happy that you came and did this.
Yeah. Thank you. This is great. Really fun. Maybe we do again.
Maybe we do again. For the next big proj.
In fact,
you know what will be fun? If you came with one of the queens for next time.
That'd be fun. A little
because, you know, I've been wanting to ask Britta to come on.
Oh, she'd be great.
Oh, my God.
That would be fun.
Honestly, would be a joy.
Do so you know fun. Christy Cello? She was so obsessed with her when we did a show with her that Christy was also on that she had Britta on her podcast. Yes. And they got along like famous old queens.
Well, Britta is such a star, and also her voice.
Yeah.
Is
her voice.
Sexy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll come back with Britta, honestly.
Love it.
And this is an amazing person, and I'm also joined right here with an amazing person, and that's Bowen Yang.
Oh, bitch.
He is my sister.
This is my rock. This is my whore.
And we have been crying many tears.
We have been crying, but that's okay.
We've been crying. We've been dying.
We've been lying.
Okay. We've been lying.
Okay.
We've been crying.
We've been dying. We've been sighing.
Okay, sorry.
He thinks because he went to musical theater school, he's better than us. Kill him, Bo.
Oh! Ow! Ow! Oh! No! Not my dick!
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.